Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's October 28, 2013, and this is episode 393. Today I bring you an interview with Oded Wagenstein, and I wanted to just let you know before we jump into that, that if you are listening to this on the audio, then you can also go and just watch the video. We did this via Google Plus, so you can follow along with the video and see both myself and Oded working through the images. Otherwise, if you are listening to the Enhanced podcast, you've got it all here as well, because I'm going to be embedding the images so that you'll be able to follow along. And also note that I will put links to Oded's book, his new craft and vision book, The Visual Storyteller, in the show notes, along with links to other ways in which you can follow and get in touch with Oded. So if you'd like to jump over to the blog and check that out, that's at mbp.ac/393. I hope you enjoy the interview. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Oded Wagenstein, and Oded is a accomplished Israeli photographer and regular contributor to the Israeli edition of National Geographic Traveler magazine. And he's just joined the Craft and Vision fold. So we're now Craft and Vision brothers. His new book, The Visual Storyteller, is an excellent introduction into incorporating story into your photographs. So welcome to the podcast, Oden.
Hello, Martin. How are you? Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, not at all. I'm really, really pleased to be talking with you today. And we've got a lot to talk about. And I'm going to, just for the sake of the listeners, what we'll do is I'll release this as an audio podcast tomorrow. But today we're also live on Google Plus. This is a live hangout. So we are going to invite questions as well. If anybody has any questions, drop them into the comments field underneath this video, or I'll also maybe later play around with the Q&A feature on this, so we can actually ask questions there. But let's jump in and start asking you a bunch of questions first, Oded.
Okay, great.
So first of all, congratulations on your new book. It's really, really nice. I'm about two-thirds of the way through it right now. Got a few pages left, but it's really, really cool.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's every bit deserved. Let's step back in time a little bit and tell us first when and how you got into photography.
Well, I hate to admit, but my story is a little bit cliche. Since I remember myself, I hold the camera in my hand. I like photography. I like cinematography. And my father really encouraged me to go to this, to get to this, I don't know if profession, but to this hobby. But I did this with many other hobbies. I was a DJ, I like cooking. I did this with many hobbies. But only in my early 20s, I decided that I must focus on something. And then that's kicked off, and I discovered traveling, and then that's really kicked off.
Wow. So how old were you when you actually start? Because, I mean, traveling obviously takes a little bit of, you know, you need some financial help there. How old were you when you really started to be able to travel and develop your love of travel photography?
Okay. Well, first of all, you're right. You need a financial ability, but it's depend on the way you travel. Here in my country, in Israel, after the military service, a travel is a must. Everybody go travel. It's like a stage in life. So like everyone else, I went for 1 month in Thailand. You know, it was really, didn't think about photography, about travel photography. And then I discovered this amazing combination between traveling and photography. I discovered that the camera is a tool for me to go to new places, meeting new people. I after the military service, I got myself a normal day job at the office, and I was keep thinking about photography. The only things I did a little bit different is every year I just quit my job and go traveling, you know, without anyone finding it, without anyone saying, okay, Oded, we will buy the photos, just alone. And, you know, it's a bit naive, but I would imagine that I got like an imaginary editor that is waiting for my photos. So I set myself to a self assignment each year, traveling mostly alone. I cannot say that my parents really loved it, but you know, this, you know, because everybody else is starting learning at university and doing their SATs, and I'm traveling in India or Central Asia. But that's how I started. I just, you know, it took me some time to call myself a true photographer. I just imagined I'm one, and it came.
Well, I know that you're a regular contributor to the National Geographic Traveler magazine, the Israeli edition. How did that come about? I mean, it sounds like it's a natural progression, but I'm sure it wasn't as easy as that. How did that come about?
No, not at all. As I said, I'm doing this for the past 10 years, but I had a normal day job for 7 years in this. Period, and each year I will go abroad and got my portfolio better and bigger, and then about 7 years ago I started working for a small magazine, small newspaper, again for money who won't cover the expenses even, and then the portfolio progressed, and then about 4 years ago I started working with National, which I sent them my portfolio after traveling to the border of China and Pakistan, and that's it. That was my first story published. I must mention on this point that I'm also writing the stories.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm offering them a whole package. I'm writing and photographing. So for me, it's a bit more difficult, but for them, it's a whole package and it's much better.
And is that, I mean, National Geographic is about the photojournalism, you know, not just the photos, but the actual writing of the articles. Do you find that is that the common way that a person, if, say, for example, a listener who's also interested in travel or has been working on projects where they've got a significant body of work, if they want to submit that to National Geographic, do you think that they should do that with the text as well, actually write the articles and submit them together? Is that the sort of thing that would be expected?
Well, that's a good question. On my new released ebook, I interviewed my editor over at the National Geographic and National Geographic Traveler, Ms. Daphna Raz, and I asked her exactly the same question. What is the secret? What a photographer need to do today? And she said that the time that you went to somewhere exotic, you know, and took some pictures and someone bought it, will buy it, is over. Today you have to be a multitask. Okay, you have to write, you have to photograph, you have to do videos, you gotta have the blog, you need to be multitask. But not all photographers like to write, and that's fine. That doesn't mean that they cannot work with a magazine. They can cooperate with maybe a writer, and that's stuff we do from time to time. Like I'm going with a writer and act as a photographer. But the more you can offer, the more the chance they will like to have it. But again, it's not a must. You don't must to like writing. And I think I must say that for me, writing is much more difficult than photography.
Yeah.
Because in photography, you have like a starting point. You have the reality. But in writing, everything is here. And it's a bit more complicated. But I must say that the writing really helped me as a photographer. Because I was committed to the story. The understanding of visual storytelling starts because I'm writing. And I was thinking, okay, who is my hero in this story? What is the narrative? What is the main event of this story? What is the climax? And from then, I start develop the visual storytelling theory.
I see what you're saying. I mean, obviously, if you're only looking for images, then it's going to be more image based. But if you're trying to tell a story, you really need the images to tell that story. So,
I agree. Yeah. And I will encourage the listeners to or our audience to learn photography. Learn photography, but not only photography. Learn language, learn anthropology, learn history. Everything you will learn will be, Ansel Adams once said that your images, I can't remember the quote exactly, but your images are not only images, they are the people you love, the music you hear, the food you eat. Mm. Everything you are will be transformed into the image. So the more you know, the more knowledge you have, it will be inside that image, okay? Because images are not just aesthetically beautiful. They need to have something in it.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. So you tell us about the visual storyteller, because obviously you're basing a lot of this on the, you know, your own experiences in the field, and you've put that into a book, which is really an amazing introduction to the craft and vision community. It's just, I think it's a great addition. Tell us a little bit about, well, you know, go through the what the book is about, and we'll look at some images as well later, but okay. you can give us a bit of background on that.
Okay, first of all, I must say about the book and about this interview as well and about my whole approach, it's a toolbox. It's not something that is total. Let's say if I tell you, if you close your aperture, the depth of field will be, you know, deep. This is mathematics. You can argue with me. But the visual storyteller and my approach is something we can argue about. So this is first. So the Visual Storyteller ebook is a toolbox, which I built over more than a year of work. What I didn't mention, that I'm also a photography instructor for the past 3 years. I'm the head of education development in Israel's biggest photography school named Galitz Photography School. Mm. And over there, every day I meet students. I meet students and I review their images. They review mine by lecturing to them, and I discovered that many people would like their image to, you know, to be out there. Well, we are living in an amazing era for photographers. Let's say in the 80s, if you want your images to meet the crowds, you need to write a book, you need to have a gallery wanting to publish you, you need to work for National Geographic. Today, you don't have to do it. You know, it's amazing to see your images on National Geographic, but with Facebook, with Flickr, with the internet, you can have a mass crowds for your work. Okay. Yeah. But there is a negative point to this era, that we are everyone becomes photographer.
Yeah.
We are filled with images.
Yeah.
Today your audience saw thousands of images, you know, on Facebook, on road signs. And we become, you know, less sensitive for new images. We saw everything. Mm. So I noticed that my students want to bring something fresh, something new. And they just frustrated because they don't know how. Okay. You travel. Okay. You love traveling. You are excited about traveling. But then when you come back with the images and show them to other people, let's say, a month later, they don't feel the same.
Yeah.
And you feel frustrated. Why I cannot manage to transfer my story to the other people?
Yeah.
So that's the point where I started writing visual story as a tool that will combine photography tips, but also narratology tips, you know, the theory of telling stories. And that's the starting point of this ebook, give you, you know, thinking methodology, thinking points about how to create better pictures. Because, you know, HDR won't be here always. It won't. It will last, you know, I hope till tomorrow and that's it. But it won't be here always. But stories, emotion will be here always, always. It's been here for centuries. It will stay here. So this is what I believe is the core element in good photography. It doesn't matter which photographer you are, because even if you are a landscape photographer, you need to give some sort of emotion in your, some sort of story in your images. You know, it can be a story of the experiment that you had while seeing this view.
Yeah.
Okay, but this is the difference between an image which is like everyone else, or a different one from your point of view.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it is definitely more difficult to put emotion into images when there's no person in there. We find it,
yeah,
it's much easier to relate to an image when there's a person in there. And it's like my profile photo on Google Plus at the moment is me looking out across a landscape in Iceland. And obviously I was there shooting the landscape, and I've got lots of photos that I like, but I think it's much easier to relate to that photograph because I'm standing there looking out across the same landscape, and people
right.
can relate to it a lot more easily. But yeah, I mean,
Martin, you now discovered the secret to the job of the travel photographer. When I'm sent by a magazine to do an assignment, they told me, we will send you, you know, today magazines are not sending photographers out there because there are stock photography and image bank, but still sometimes magazines do send me, and they tell me, I want you to come back with a sense of place,
yeah,
giving the audience the feeling that they are right there with you. So even in my landscape photography, I'm trying to combine humans, as you said, because people like to see other people.
So I think that there's, you know, there's a lot to learn here, obviously, with your book as well. I really enjoyed the way you spoke about highlighting. And what I'm going to do is, just so that we can talk about this, I am going to share my screen and show the audience where we go. Where's Lightroom gone? Just give me a moment.
In the meantime, I can tell you a little bit about highlighting.
Sure. You start that.
Okay. Highlighting is sort of my own modern version of the decisive moment theory by Henri Cartier-Bresson.
Yeah.
I'm going to explain about it for 1 second. Here we go.
So highlighting this one.
Yeah, it's festival image. Yeah, here we go. Okay. So Henri Cartier-Bresson was the founder of Magnum Photography Agency, one of the best photographers agency in the world. And he also acclaimed photographer. People think of him as the founder of street photography and photojournalism. And he said that he coined the decisive moment theory, which is all about the moment you click that shadow, okay? Yes, the lens is important, the light is very important, the composition, but for him, the most important thing was that moment you clicked, okay?
Yeah.
But the problem is that there are not any decisive moments left for us, you know? Let's say if you are a photojournalist covering a revolution in Egypt, yes, you will have decisive moments, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you are shooting landscape, or if you are just travel photographer in India, well, you don't have many decisive moments in your life. Our life don't have many decisive moments on our daily life. So I took this term and toned it a bit down and call it a highlight.
Mm.
What do I mean by highlighting? If I will ask you, tell me, Martin, about your day.
Yeah.
Well, you would say, yeah, I went to work, I meet this and that. What you're actually doing is highlighting specific stories in your day. I did this thing many times, and nobody told me, well, I brushed my teeth this morning, although I hope everybody does it.
Hmm.
Because we as a storytellers don't think that this is an important thing to mention. So in our everyday lives, we are doing highlighting, choosing the most important aspects of the story and showing it out. So on this image, I shot this image for National Geographic Traveler magazine on an Indian festival, and I think India is an amazing photography location, but it's also a very popular one. You've seen it all. You've seen the Taj Mahal in every angle and every lighting position. So I was thinking really hard, how can I transfer the feeling I had in an Indian festival? I want to transfer that sense of place, that energy, that motion, okay? Because pictures of people in colorful clothes won't work anymore, okay? So in this picture, I don't think I can call it a decisive moment, because it's not. It's a regular, you know, it's a regular picture. But this moment of a man jumping into the sea, being my main hero in this image, this is highlighting. This is showing you one freezing moment in this festival, and I hope the audience, while seeing this photo, feeling the same energy, the same atmosphere I felt in that Indian festival. So that's highlighting. Let's take it to portrait photography, for example. Okay.
Okay.
When I see a person, you know, shooting a person as a regular portrait, okay, many people think a portrait is something like this.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not. A portrait is by definition is a an image or a painting of a person that the audience can discover something about this person by that image.
Yeah.
Okay. So highlighting, for example, okay, is okay. Yeah, you can take this image for okay. Say on the man with a mustache.
This one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. First of all, as you can see, I'm not showing his entire body. I'm highlighting specific things on this scene. Okay. When I show my students this image, I ask them, what do you feel? Okay. This is the first question I usually ask my
yeah.
students. What do you feel? And they tell me, yes, there is an old man here. No, I say, don't tell me what do you see. Tell me what do you feel. There is a difference
yeah.
between what do you see than what do you feel. So they tell me, well, he's very sad. He's missing someone. He's looking back on. And this man named Alif Beck, I met him in Tajikistan.
Yeah.
And what he do, he just wait for the bus. He's just
yeah.
waiting for the bus. But when I saw him and talked with him, we will later, if we have time, discuss a bit about my portrait approach, but I'm usually talking with my subject.
Yeah.
And as I was speaking with him, I felt as he's a bit sad, missing his family, you know, his glory is behind. And that's how I want to highlight him as a person.
Mm.
So I did everything I can in my toolbox to transfer this story, okay, this highlight, okay,
yeah
because you cannot tell the story of the whole person.
Yeah,
you can highlight something. So I highlight his sad eyes.
Yeah,
I crop his head.
Mm.
I shoot him a bit from above. I did everything that I can that when you see the image, I hope that you feel the same as I felt when I met him. So this is highlighting, choosing, you know. My students ask me if shooting someone's hands can be a portrait.
Mm.
So I tell them, did you meet a person with hands that can tell stories? Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Hands can tell stories. This is highlighting.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, I totally see what you mean. I mean, the image here, the highlights in the eyes, and just the whole story. This guy's got a whole life written on his face, and it's just a beautiful way to portray that. You know, the lighting and everything is perfect. I love the highlights, not to use the same word, but the way his mustache seems almost to glow on his face as well.
Hmm.
It's just a really, really beautiful image.
Thank you. So, and again, this is not a decisive moment. This is nothing special. This is daily life, but it's a highlight of something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. So I'm going to jump back out of there, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this back over to my main screen here, so that the next time I show you an image, it'll be larger in the frame.
No problem.
I was using my Retina screen to show that, and it makes everything smaller. So let's see. Shall we? Let me talk before we go in and take a look at a few more of your images. I know that you do workshops. I found out just the other, you told me the other day that you were here in Japan just last week.
Yes.
which is terrible. I wish we could have met. but what sort of stuff? How do you teach workshops? What kind of workshops do you teach, and how do they progress?
Okay, first of all, I truly love teaching.
Mm.
because I learned a lot from my students. They ask me to progress my portfolio all the time. You know, I need to bring new stuff, and I just love teaching. So as part of my work in the photography school in Israel, we are organizing a workshop, international workshops. This year I was in Japan and in Georgia and in Laos, which we just learn on the field. We learn this kind of visual storytelling. I think that the best way to learn is seeing someone else doing what he loves, you know? So they see me, I see them, we combine our techniques, and it can be 4 or 5 days or 7 days of you doing exactly what you love with people, with other people who are doing exactly what they love. And it's the same hobby, it's the same thing, and it's usually an amazing experience.
Yeah.
So this is what those workshops are all about. And you can see the details on my website, auditwagon.com. You can see the details for the international and local workshops.
Yeah. So while we're on that point, obviously, if for the people that are watching, you can see that Oded has his URL on his lower thirds there, but also, I'll put all of this in the show notes and
here. Yeah.
So in the show notes, I'll put this. But also, yeah, here we go. What normally I do is when I release a podcast, I have a short link, and it's mbp.ac and then the episode number. So for this week, it will be mbp.ac/393 because we're at episode 393. So. Oded, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back into Lightroom, and we're going to bring up a few more images so that you can talk us through a few others.
Okay.
So let me just share this.
Let's go for the first one with the lake. This is a perfect example for the things you mentioned earlier about combining a human being with a landscape. I think... the landscape itself, it's quite nice, but the landscape with a human being is already a story. This is called Karakul Lake. Karakul Lake, there are 5 places in Asia called Karakul, but this one is in China. The border between China and the mountain over there are Kyrgyzstan. So I think... And I'm gonna tell you now that the biggest secret in visual storytelling. So I might need to kill you afterwards. So the biggest thing in visual storytelling is emotion. Okay, people connect to images via emotions. Okay, you know, when we think about the Mona Lisa, why it's so famous? Because you keep thinking, what the hell does she feel?
Mm.
Is she sad? Is she happy? You know, this is emotion, okay? Mm. So, yes, of course, this is an image. You can say that the story is the landscape, it's the place. But the way I see it, there is a hero in this image. The hero is the little lady, which, you know, you can see it very, very small comparing to the whole image. But this is the main hero in my story. So an image of a landscape or a location, yeah. This story deals with human struggle. You know, this woman carrying the 2 buckets on her back. So this is visual storytelling, giving your audience to feel a universal emotion, not just any emotion, okay, but a universal emotion.
Mm.
So the thing I like to do the most with my students when we are talking about main subject or main hero, I keep telling them that every image needs a main subject, okay? A main subject is something that your eyes will see immediately. This is the main character of this image. This is the main thing that if you take it out, the image won't not look the same. There are 4 houses in this image. If I take one of them, okay, it won't be the same. This main character is so strong that I can say almost with 100% that you didn't notice there is a red bike between house number 3 and 4 from the left. There is a red bike over there. Okay, but people don't notice it because there is a main character over here. Yeah. And I keep telling my students that a landscape cannot be your main character. I'm asking a student, what is the main character of this image? Oh, well, the street. Well, the environment. No, a main character is something very specific. Let's talk about landscape photography. Ansel Adams, who were, I think, the best landscape photographer in history, he, if you see his portfolio, you keep seeing there in every image, it's not just landscape. It's a landscape, but there is something more powerful within, like a big rock or a tree or a river. There is something very noticeable inside the image that you can call it the main character. So for me, this lady there is the main character of this image. And the best way to check if you got your main character in this image is to block it. Put your two fingers on the lady, and you will suddenly see that the image become boring. Boring. But with this lady, I feel that this image have a story, and this image brought me my first story in the National Geographic. It published on the spread image, and it opened my article on this area of Karakul Lake.
Wow, that's really cool. So, I noticed that my friend Henry Stradford's in the audience. Thanks for your comment, Henry. Henry says that the person makes the photo. And absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
But I must say, sorry, Martin. I must say that it doesn't have to be a human being. You know,
let's you mean the look highlight,
at the picture.
Right?
Look at the picture behind you. There is a picture of trees.
Yeah.
Okay. There are three trees over there, but there is one which is more noticeable, which I think is the one on the left.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, it looks like a human being with hands, okay? Without this tree, this image will be totally different. So yes, a human being is excellent in an image, but it can be anything, as long as it's noticeable. If you ask 100 people, they will say, yeah, this is the main subject.
Yeah, obviously I agree with what you're saying, and I think that if you say that all landscape photographs are boring without a photo, you're going to upset like 90% of the people.
Without a human.
A
human.
So,
I agree. I totally agree.
But the point is, though, is that you still have to find something within the image that is a highlight.
I agree.
And that is always, it's the difficult thing. I mean, I've been talking for a long time about evoking emotions in people as well. You've got to really make someone feel something, whether it's happiness, sadness. You know, the thing you don't want to make them feel is indifference. And
I agree.
As long as you cause another emotion with some element in your photo, and then you're doing a good job.
So I agree.
Henry says, "My eyes first go to the houses, then is drawn to the person." Also, if you take out the far right house, the rule of odds, rule of thirds, would make this look better. So, yeah.
I want to say something about that. Hey, Henry, how are you? First of all, thank you for joining. The same Ansel Adams told that in every picture he made, there are two people. And people ask him, wait, you are a landscape photographer. How come there are people in the photo? No, he said, no, there is the photographer and there is the viewer. Every one of us got different point of view, different eyes. For Henry, which I can guess that he's maybe a more technical person, okay? He relate more to the houses, and that's perfectly fine. You know, people say, oh, for me, I like to interact with the mountain. Take away the woman. Okay, but for 99% of the people, the main subject of this image is the woman. Okay, so it's very important to note that we are different people. Yeah. Okay, and everybody see different thing.
I think, you know, Henry agrees. His first comment was that the woman makes the person makes the thing. It's just that he's talking about the maybe lose the house, and it might make the image a bit stronger. But
well, I agree.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go, let me just go back into this, and we'll move on to the next photograph.
So there we go. We've got, this is nice and big now. So tell us about this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will tell you about the progress of this photo, how I came to make it, and then why I show it right now. I went to Laos and I saw a few children playing like on the river bank, and you know, I took the photo and I look at the photo, which is something I really like to do. I make one click and then immediately look at the photo. I don't make like six or seven. And I asked myself, Oded, what do you think of this photo? And my answer was, it's boring. Why it's boring? Because, well, I didn't have my tele lens, the children look very far, and well, I saw thousands of pictures of people, of children in third world countries playing in the river. So what I did is something I like to call the evolution of the frame. You know, I didn't stay there and take more boring photos. I was thinking, what can I do to make it better? Well, I will go closer. And then I got closer and almost get inside the water and took another image of the children. And I look at the image and I noticed that this image is still boring. Okay. So I decided to give my camera away to my girlfriend who was standing there, and I just play with the children, you know, in the water. Oh, okay. So I understand that this scene won't make a good image. So I stop shooting. And then 15 minutes later, rain start pouring, and the children were running out of the water. And this small child, he just grabbed his puppy and hold him for him not to be scared from the rain.
Mm.
And then I grabbed my camera back and I took this image. Mm. And people always ask me, how did you manage to, you know, shoot 20 centimeters from his face and he still look, you know, spontaneous and into the moment? And that's because he already knew me. I was there 15 minutes before I took this image. This image is an evolution of 3 or 4 boring image that came before.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is usually what I do. I need to make few images until the right image will come. And it can be 10 seconds later and it can be 1 year later.
Mm.
Okay. So this is the first thing I want to tell about this evolution of the frame. The second thing is the thing we talked about, the human universal emotion. I think everybody, I hope that everybody all over the world can explain the story of this image. You know, they can say he's sad, he's scared, the puppy and the boy are you know, like friends. No matter wherever on the globe will say there is happiness in this image. And this is exactly universal emotions, because your images need to provoke an emotion or a story that everyone will understand.
Yeah.
Okay? Everyone will understand, and that's why you need to go to the core elements of, you know, people sometimes making stories which are a bit complicated, a bit like a riddle, which is fine, which I like. I like an image when you need to think. But for me, the best images are the one with the core, you know, the really core elements that bring us back. And what I like about this image is that I could make it anywhere in the world. You know, I showed it on my house, but I can make it outside my house, you know, here in my village. And I think this is for me a good photograph, because this is a universal emotion in there. One more thing about this image is about the composition.
Yeah.
Usually I don't crop my images, not as ideology. I just don't like to crop them. So this image is the original cropping. And when I shot this image, I knew that the puppy is a problem. Why is a problem? Because my main character is the boy.
Mm.
Okay. If you take out the puppy, the image will still work, I hope. But if you take out the boy, there is just a puppy. So I know my main character in this image is the boy.
Yeah.
The puppy is the supportive character, which is another subject that can highlight a specific story in this image. He add contrast and he add emotion to this story. But I was afraid that the puppy might steal the show. So by doing this composition, which I cropped most of the puppy's body. Okay, I don't have any problems with puppies. I just, you know, like it much better. But I told to my audience, look, there is a boy here. He is the main character. The puppy is just a standing, you know, a supportive character.
Yeah.
And I did it by via the tool of composition. Yeah. Okay. I gave the boy 80% and the puppy 20%.
Yeah. No, I totally works for me.
Thanks.
So,
thank you.
Let's move on. We've spoken about. Do you want to add anything to the conversation about this image?
Yeah,
or?
Yes. Again, as I said, for me, there are not decisive moments on my daily life. I need to make them.
Yeah.
And for me, the most important thing about portrait photography is not finding a person with interesting face. You know. My hero, and I think everyone in this industry likes Steve McCurry. You know, Steve McCurry, the National Geographic photographer who photographed the Afghan girl image. Well, I was fortunate enough to interview him for my blog. And we talked about visual storytelling, and he told me that making an image of a person in Papua New Guinea with the bone sticking his nose is nice. It's nice aesthetically, it's interesting, but it's not a story, okay? Making the viewer feel, okay, or learn how does it feel to live with a bone in your nose, this is a story. Yeah. What I'm trying to say that people, and I was the same, you know, people are thinking that if you find an interesting person, again, from a third world country, and if he got, you know, a funny mustache or rings around his neck, it will be an amazing photo. No, it won't. Okay, this photo will interest only people from Western countries. You know what I mean? This photo will not last. Okay, I'll give you an example. There is a tribe in Thailand called the Long Neck Tribe. You know this one, probably.
I know them. Yeah.
Okay, so this tribe, It used to be a very nice one. They called the Karen tribes, and people think that if they saw this long neck, it's very authentic. But actually, today the real Karen tribe don't wear these traditional rednecks. You know, today's Karen tribe, they got iPhones, they got jeans. So if you want to make a true authentic picture of the Karen tribe in Thailand, you need to shoot those tribe people with iPhones and jeans. This is the real story.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to this image. It doesn't matter. I shoot this image in Tajikistan. Okay. It doesn't matter. Okay. And this person can be your grandfather or my grandfather. This image, I hope, is working because there is a human emotion, a universal one, which you can recognize. A funny hat or a weird mustache won't make an image. It can add, but it won't make the image. Okay, if you buy a flight ticket to India and you know, shoot people with wrinkles, that won't make you a travel photographer. Okay, that's the easy job. The hard job is go outside your house to the main square or something and telling stories in your area.
Yeah, so, I know what you mean. It's often difficult to find. I mean, with me living in Tokyo, I've lived in Japan for 23 years now, and I don't think that it's an exotic foreign place. To me, it's just home. But people that visit see so much more than I do when I'm, you know, because they're always looking at things. Everything looks so different. So I think that your own backyard can often be the most difficult place to photograph in. But unless you're going to jump on a plane every time you want to make a decent image, you have to learn how to do that.
The thing for me is to go to different places and find the same emotions I know from my own place. You know, to go to Tajikistan and not showing you the amazing landscape, but just the this human emotion, which is almost very subtle. On this person's face. And another thing I want to mention on this image is our toolbox as a photographer when shooting an image. Okay, we have tons of tools. Well, composition, color, angle, and we should think about those tools when we're making a visual story. Okay, when I shot this person, as I told you, I want to convey the feeling that he's a bit sad. So first of all, I shoot him a little bit from above. Okay, a little bit from above, and this is immediately make him smaller. I put him on the right side of the frame. Well, a classic composition will put him on the left side, giving him a looking space.
Yeah.
But I put him on the right side to block his face with the end of the frame, to give you, the audience, a feeling that he can breathe. Okay. Usually my students ask me, well, Odin, do you really think about those things when you're making a photo? You just, you know, talked about it later. I try to think. There are sometimes situations where I just clicking my shutter, having fun. But if I'm thinking before, those images are going to be good. You know, thinking about my angle, my composition, what I would like to say about this person.
Yeah.
What I would like to convey. I want to convey happiness or sadness. Yeah. Because if you don't decide, then it will be ambiguous.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. So let's move on to another one. This amazing photo here.
Thank you.
Tell us about this.
Well, this photo is also a part of my first story on National Geographic. This photo are published there, and usually they don't publish these kinds of portraits. For me, portrait photography is about knowing new people. Okay, I keep saying that I don't get closer to my subjects in order to photograph them in the end. I photograph them in order to get closer to them. You understand the difference? Because
Absolutely, for me,
the camera is just a tool. You know, the camera can be a bridge between people, but it can also be a separation tool, because if you stand behind your camera, this black big thing, and cover behind it, and won't make an eye contact, you will scare your subject. For me, the first thing is coming as a person and not as a photographer. So usually when I approach a person, the camera is in my bag, is not in my hand. Okay, and then my students ask me, but what happened if you see suddenly something happen, you know, a decisive moment? Well, okay, let it be. It's fine by me, okay? Because I'm not a hunter. You know, I like to sit with a person, I like to talk with him. And again, this image, it's not a cropped image. I shot this image very close to this face. This is an old man in a Chinese tea house in Kashgar, which is a Muslim region in North China. And from this image, you can see how close I was to this person. And I'm not talking about, you know, physically close, but I hope emotionally.
Yeah.
And for me, this is portrait photography. I don't like shooting people from a distance. So usually my image include interacting with my subject.
Yeah, you know, I used to, when I first started, I don't do a lot of portrait photography, but when I first started going to India, when I was still in my old job, for a while I would photograph from the car as we went past, and a lot of the time I felt like a sniper. And although you know, there were some times when I even made eye contact and requested permission to make the photograph. Like I got a photograph of a young man on a bus in the rain, and I held the camera up. I still like the photograph. The guy looked across, and I showed him the camera and said, "Is it okay?" You know, I was like going "Okay," with my mouth, and he just sort of nodded slightly. And I shot one frame, but that was one time where I felt okay with it. But after a while, I realized that the shots I was getting with just as a sniper were really not fulfilling for me, and probably not for the person that was having their photograph taken anyway. So after a while, I decided to stop doing that. And I would take walks in the market and communicate with people And I actually went back to the same market and took photos of the people that I'd shot the year before and had another conversation with them and things like that. So I totally agree. You know, I mean, making that human connection is very important. And I think it shows in your images.
Thank you. And I must say on this point, I totally agree with you. But I think we must say that there is not a one proper way of doing it. Because our next image is from a different approach. But you can choose. As a photographer, you can choose your tool of work. And you can choose this image I would like to shoot from a distance, but this image is better from going you know, getting closer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should just say, I'm not saying that you can't do candid. You know, there's a difference between candid and shooting from a moving vehicle. I think it's
I agree. It's
okay to be to just snap and then, you know, you don't have to have the communication thing.
I agree. Yeah, can I ask you something, Martin?
Sure.
Why did you feel the need to shoot from the moving vehicle?
It wasn't that. It was partly because I was actually there on business. I was there doing something totally different, and so I really just didn't. I wasn't able to get out, but I wanted. I felt it so amazing that I needed to get some sort of photos, and it wasn't until I went back a little later when I was able to make the time to actually go and spend time in the markets. So it wasn't so much that although part of it initially was also because I was apprehensive. I didn't feel comfortable making photos of people, but a part of it was just a necessity of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy that you came out of your comfort zone, and I think this is really, really difficult. Difficult step to do, to say, well, I'm going out there, I'm going to approach this person. And I think this is a huge step, and that's great.
Thanks. So tell us about this photo.
Okay. First of all, this photo was made from a different approach. You know, I didn't approach this woman, I didn't talk with her. This is a hunter approach. Well, I was there in Istanbul. I was making a story about Istanbul about 4 years ago. And, you know, everyone who visits Istanbul know it's a very cosmopolitical city, one part in Europe, one part in Asia. And I want to convey this story of the place in my image, okay? This story of modern and ancient. So I started thinking, how can I convey this? And this technique is one of the most important technique in visual storytelling, which is pre-visual, okay? Pre-visual, which is again a term by the great Ansel Adams. That pre-visual, by Ansel Adams, he said that pre-visualing is making the image before doing the exposure, making the image in your head. Yeah. And I think this is the core secret for 95% of my images. Mm. I imagine them first. So let's talk about this image. I thought, well, what can I do to convey this story of East and West? I was walking around the city and I was noticing advertisement posters with a model, you know, lingerie model. And I said, okay, I will take it as a background. And I put like a traditional woman, you know, in the front with a burqa all covered, you know, the most cliche image you ever saw. Okay. Mm-hmm. But this was my basic approach. So I went out to the streets and found my background, my posters, and wait for women to just go in front of it. And I got few nice images, but again, they were very cliche. Mm. Then I ride the train, and I was sitting inside the train, and the train was stopping, you know, because of there is a station there. And then I saw this moment. Mm. Okay. And then it hits me, you know, it hits me that this is exactly what I wanted. Okay, and I hope you can understand the story within and the message about the place, about the city. And you know, when I showed it to my students, they said, "Wow, you are so lucky, you know, to capture it in this in the, that that position and with that composition. And no, I wasn't lucky. This is a process of evolution. I was thinking about this image the whole morning, and then when it came, it just hit me. I just clicked the shadow one time, and that's it.
Mm.
I
think I'm gonna play devil's advocate there, because I think that you have to be aware, you have to be looking for this. There's no way your camera's not gonna shoot it itself. But I think sometimes when people talk about luck, there's definitely an element of luck in that lady sat in that position with, you know, you couldn't control where the person was sitting. So I think that there's always an element of luck in that, you know, things have to come together, but you've got to be looking for it. And I think that's what you're talking about here.
You can see there is a text in the image named Journey. Well, this is 100% luck. It could be anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm lucky it was Journey. But the thing I'm saying that as you said, the camera is a recording tool. That's it.
Yeah.
A recording tool. What you record, it records your vision, your thinking. And if you don't think before, the image will be boring.
Yeah. So before we move on to the next one, I just want to say thanks to Rafi. We've got a comment from Rafi. It's not a question, just a shout out. Listening from Manila in the Philippines. Great show.
Oh, great.
So thank you very much,
Rafi.
So let's move on to this photograph, another beautiful one.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about this. Let's have a talk about this one, Odin.
Sorry,
go on. Yeah, let's just have a talk about this one.
Okay. So this is, again, like most of my images, this is the final image of a long evolution, but I'm going to make the story short this time. Everyone who visited Southeast Asia saw the monks, you know, walks like parade and gather food every morning. You know, this is something they do. Yeah. And when I saw this monks gathering food, I approach one of them and I asked them if can I join you, you know? And I just walked with them and I got few cliche photos of monks. And then I come back later in the afternoon and to the same monastery they were staying. And because they knew me from the morning, our morning time, I already got my access, you know? I could shoot them without them, you know, noticing or putting a mask, because I think this is the most difficult thing in portrait photography. What do you do with that mask that people put on themselves, you know, that persona, when they see a camera? So if you come as a person without a camera and only then take it out, then the mask won't be there. Anyway, I took a few photos and it was nice, nothing to write home about. And I put my camera aside and I met this young boy who his name is Sid. And I was asking, you know, many questions, because I understand that he was English speaker, and I understand that I got an opportunity to speak with a monk. You know, it's much better than taking a photo of a monk. So I put the camera aside and just start talking with him, because I got excited about knowing him much more than making one more photo of another monk. You know, you saw this photo a thousand times. And I asked him many questions, like I asked him, you are 13, why are you a monk? And he told me his story, that you know, his family is very poor, so they send him to the monastery. And you know, we were together like half an hour or an hour, and then I asked him, where do you sleep? Where is your house? And he climbed on the stairs and said, here. And I told him, wait a second, I'm going to bring you the camera. And then I did this shot. Right. And this shot was a few months later, this shot was published as photo of the month by the International National Geographic. It was on the cover of the website.
Cool.
And I'm telling you this not to make a show off, but to explain or to prove a very core thing about visual storytelling in people photography. Sometimes if you leave the camera behind and stop thinking about what lens to put now, what depth of field, what composition, just leave it behind and enjoying the moment, enjoying the experience, enjoying meeting a new person and being able to speak with him, and then only later make a few photos. You know, from time to time, I talked with the person and said, oh, wow, I got a camera here. I need to make a few photos. and then I make this photo. So for me, if I got this kind of photo once a year, I'm very happy.
Yeah. So I'm fully with you on that as well. I was in Antarctica for like 7 weeks at the end of last year, and absolutely. There was a few times when I'd done all of the work I wanted to do, and I was really looking and waiting for new stuff to happen. So rather than just continuing, just because I'm there, continuing to try and make every moment a photography moment, a number of times I just found a rock and sat on the beach. There'd be a glacier carving over one side, and I'm sitting on a beach, and all of a sudden a Gentoo penguin jumps out of the water onto the beach, and he's like, okay, there's a human here. What's happening here? And he has a panic moment, but then just waddles off. And, you know, and I'm just taking this whole thing in and thinking how amazing it is just to be there. And I think that is one of my fondest memories of the time down there. It's an amazing place, and I love the photographs. But that sort of half an hour or so that I sat sitting on a rock and just taking it in is one of my best memories.
Amazing. You know, from time to time, I ask my students, you know, who come back from a trip abroad, how was your trip? And they answer, well, my photos weren't so good. No, I ask, how was your trip? You know, because we are so used to seeing our world through the viewfinder, everything is going through that filter of how my images, you know. Don't take the camera everywhere with you. I know this is a big tip for every street photographer. No, leave it behind. Go enjoy your life, and then from time to time, just snap an image. Yeah. But this image will be much better because you lived the experience. You don't see it from an outsider. Mm. You just live the place, live the landscape, live everything you are.
Yeah, totally agree. So we've got another. Let me just. We've got another comment here. Wonderful storytelling. I enjoy every moment. And this is from Ari Lewin. Thank you very much, Ari.
Thank you, Ari.
So we're going to start to wrap this up. So if anyone has any questions or anything that you'd like to ask of Oded or myself, then just drop it into the questions box there. And while we're waiting to see if any questions do come in, can you just once again tell us where people can find you online, Oded?
Yes. Well, first, I'm the only Wagenstein in the world, my family, so I got a very difficult family name, but if you type Wagenstein in Facebook, it would be me. okay. So I got a photography page on Facebook, which I shared every day. I shared pictures and published images and stories and techniques. I really love interacting with my audience, with other people. And so Facebook, and the other thing is my blog, which is on the URL there, which I interview photographers like I did with Mr. McCary, and you can find great tips over there. So the website and Facebook.
So just for those of you that are listening, and like I say, I'll put links to everything that Oded is up to into the show notes for this podcast, but I'll read it out as well. So the URL for Oded's website is odedwagen.com. So really, thank you very much. I can't see any questions coming in, so I think we'll wrap up for today. We've just ticked over an hour as well. So thank you for the people that joined to view. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Oded, and I
thank you very much.
I look forward
to it as well.
Well, it's not very often I get to talk to people that are published in the National Geographic either. So
thank you. And wait. I want to recommend one more thing. I want to recommend your latest ebook. Okay.
The sharpshooter?
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And last week I visited the macaque monkeys in Japan, and I was thinking only of you, you know. an amazing ebook, which I recommend for amateurs and professionals alike.
Hang on, here we go. We've got one. Let's see. Oh, Taisha's given us a question here. So Taisha is a friend of mine, lives over in New Zealand, and is asking, does pre-visualizing your work all the time, does pre-visualizing work all the time for you? This means coming up with ideas. Where do you get those from?
Oh, wow. This is an amazing question. Thank you very much. Again, what's your name?
Taisha.
Taisha. Thank you very much, Taisha. I think the most irritating questions I get is about my gear. You know, what lens are you using? Okay. What the hell is going to help you to know what lens that I'm using? The lens is just a pipe. It's just a pipe for my vision. So I really like these questions because this question is about inspiration. And I gained inspiration from many things. I think most of the time that I'm awake, I'm reading photography books. I'm seeing other people's portfolios. I'm going to galleries. I'm listening to music. I don't spend much money on gear. Most of my images on the National Geographic were shot with a crop factor camera, you know, 10 megapixels, something really, really old. So gear is important, but it's not the most important thing. So mainly from life and other people images and artists. I really love art, you know. I really like art.
Brilliant. So that's great. I also see Susan Rennis is in the audience. Thanks very much for stopping by, Susan.
Thanks, Susan.
So I'll just have one last look down the list to make sure we haven't got anything else that I almost missed.
No problem.
And there we go. Okay, we see a cheers from Henry. Cheers to you too, Henry. And
thank you.
Yeah, we had a bunch of people watching here, so it's been great. And I look forward to doing this again. We'll probably... normally I do my interviews by Skype, but it was interesting to do this today. So thank you very much to those of you who joined in the audience. Thank you very much once again, Oded, for
joining us.
You're welcome. And we'll hopefully meet the next time you come to Tokyo. Do let me know. We'll have to meet in person.
Of course. Thank you very much. The same for you in Israel.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay.
Okay.
Signing off.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Remember, folks, you can catch up with me at martinbaileyphotography.com. Everything that I'm into is there. This interview will be posted tomorrow, which will be October 28th. And just come and find me. Everything I'm into is at martinbaileyphotography.com. And we'll see you there. Okay, thanks again then, Oded.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.